Today on Straight Talk Africa, Brexit, or is it Regrexit? What will the United Kingdom's divorce from the European Union mean for Africa and the rest of the world? That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, June 29th. I am Shaka Sali.
Hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about African reaction to Brexit.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on our topic. That's through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. That's ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Hope you'll stay with us.
In a shocking vote that sent global markets into a free fall, Britons decided to leave the European Union. My colleague Paul Sisco takes a look at what Britain's exit may mean for Africa and the rest of the world.
The outcome of Britain's Brexit vote stunned many. The only certainty about the vote is that it is bringing uncertainty and volatility to world financial markets. How long that will last is anyone's guess. British Prime Minister David Cameron says he'll step down by October. The vote didn't go the way he had hoped.
The country's made its decision, and this government is responsible now for setting out the steps that we need to take and for doing all that's necessary to stabilise the economy. We took a choice to ask the people this very big question, because I believe in our parliamentary democracy, but when it comes to the very big decisions, I think it's right to consult the people.
South African economist Ian Cruickshanks sees rough times ahead for Africa.
The UK leaving the European Union could mean a contraction in their own economic activity and financial abilities and financial capital flows, and this is going to have an impact on South Africa. The ripple impact could be accumulating negatively, and that can affect South Africa. It can affect the flow of capital and goods to South Africa, and then through South Africa being the gateway to the continent, it can affect the flow of capital and goods to the continent as a whole. So not good for Africa.
Nigerian financial analyst Bismarck Rowain agrees that an economic slowdown is likely.
So we're dealing with change in trade patterns, change in government, probably change in philosophy, and also a change in direction of investments. It's kind of neutral because the African countries' economies are pretty well diversified. The trade is diversified, and Britain is not a major importer of African commodities as such. But in terms of imports, it makes the imports cheaper. But if this is the beginning of the breakup of Europe, rather than the consolidation of Europe, then we could see a problem.
A multitude of new agreements will have to be negotiated and renegotiated between Britain, the European Union, and African nations. Huge questions remain on agricultural subsidies, refugee policies, immigration, trade and development, and security assistance. Prime Minister David Cameron.
I will do everything I can as Prime Minister to steady the ship over the coming weeks and months, but I do not think it would be right for me to try to be the captain that steers our country to its next destination. I think the country requires fresh leadership to take it in this direction.
Prime Minister Cameron's quick response to the referendum, allowing for fresh leadership after voters chose to take the country in a new direction, is expected to bring a smooth, peaceful transition of power in Britain. For Africa's most entrenched leaders, that may be the most important lesson to take from the Brexit referendum. Paul Sisco, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. But first, for analysis, Jill Marandrino, VOA business correspondent, joins us from the New York Bureau. Hello, Jill.
Hi, how are you?
I am terrific. How are the markets reacting to the Brexit so far?
Well, it's been interesting because the first 2 days following the Brexit vote, we saw a significant sell-off in the markets. Now, prior to the sell-off, we were just about 2% away from all-time highs. So while the sell-off was exaggerated, you have to remember the levels that we were coming from. Over the course of the past 2 days, actually day and a half, because we're still trading at this point in the U.S., we are just about 3% away from all-time highs. So there has been quite a recovery here, which is understandable because there's been a lot of beaten-down sectors and stocks that kind of traded in sympathy along with the broader markets. I also find it interesting, in addition to the commodity, some currency recovery, and clearly the equity market recovery that we've seen, bonds have not sold off. And usually they trade inverse with the equity market. So it still shows that there is some volatility, a lot of uncertainty out there. So I think we'll really start to see what the impact will be probably going into next week, because we are trading into the end of the quarter, which is tomorrow on Thursday. And you typically see what's called window dressing in the U.S., where portfolio managers will buy equities to put into their portfolios. So you tend to see bullish action around that. I think next week, and when we start earnings in the second week of July, is when you're really going to be able to tell how the markets have been impacted.
If I understand you correctly, of course, that might mean the global markets. What about as far as the African continent is concerned? We're talking about mainly South Africa, perhaps, and Nigeria.
Right, right. Well, South Africa has the most exposure to the EU and the UK for trade. In fact, the UK is South Africa's fourth largest trading partner. And of course, Nigeria, Kenya, Rwanda, Uganda, all those countries that are really up and coming in the east and west part of Africa are involved with the EU as well. One thing with the South Africa you have to watch is the action in the rand. We've seen a recovery in the rand, and we've also seen a recovery in gold prices, which is interesting because the South African market rebounded on that because a big part of their index is comprised of gold mining companies. Outside of the markets, I would say the biggest issue is going to be developmental aid, and all the other poverty aid resources that are sent to Africa from the UK. Should the UK go into recession, and I'll use their development aid program as an example, 7.7% of the gross national income is allocated to developmental aid in Africa. Should the UK go into a recession, I don't think they would not participate in that allocation. But as the UK makes less money with their gross national income, that will be less money going to Africa in real terms, in terms of the pound.
Talk to us, to what extent does, for example, or do the African currencies continue to have confidence in the British pound sterling?
It's really hard to tell at this point because there is no framework that is laid out. This is going to take time. They say that there'll be a two-year period of when they will renegotiate all these trade agreements and so forth. I don't think it'll happen within 2 years. I think what we're going to see is with this Brexit vote, perhaps more leverage on the table when the UK goes to discuss this with EU leaders. I think the biggest issues right now is immigration and sort of the bureaucratic control that Brussels has over the UK. I think that's where that popular vote was surrounding Brexit. So it's too early to tell what's going to happen with trade agreements. I would watch for clues in the bond markets and, of course, in the local currency markets in Africa.
Are you in a position to share with us how it may look like in the medium and long term?
Well, I'll tell you what, for the short term, when I was first asked about this on last Friday, my advice has always been to long-term investors, don't time the market. Professionals can't do it. You certainly can't do it. In your retirement accounts, don't try and trade around an isolated event. That's why we have averages. Kind of let the noise in the market play itself out. Let global markets reestablish their ranges and look at your account in 5 to 10 years from now, because you don't want to miss out on great opportunities that could have been excellent buys for your portfolio. For example, in the U.S. markets, when we hit that low in the S&P 500 in 2008 with our financial crisis, the market has rebounded almost 300% since then. If you would have tried to isolate that one market event, you would have lost out on tremendous growth in your portfolio. So just like it's going to take patience and time to figure out how this referendum is going to be handled, you have to give patience and time for your longer-term portfolios as well.
To what extent would you say you are surprised so far as far as the dynamics are concerned?
You know, I'm more surprised on the social and political level, and we can understand that a lot in the U.S. with our national election cycle. We are seeing a strong populist movement here as well. There is every day there's something new with a mass shooting or a terrorist attack, and people are becoming more protective of their countries and they want these borders built up. So I wasn't quite as surprised to see the Brexit vote, although the markets weren't really signaling that was going to happen. But I think on a larger scale, this is something that everyone across the globe has to be concerned about. And now that the hangover is over from the Brexit vote, you have to figure out what's going to happen next, because we are so globally intertwined. economically, socially, politically, and I think that's really what the case is here. The trade agreements will work themselves out. It's just going to require some time.
Thank you very much, Jill, for interacting with
us. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Now, joining us here is our distinguished guest, Oble Ruby, Senior Fellow, the Atlantic Council, recipient of the 2016 Axiom Award, co-author of The Next Africa, managing partner of Noveni Advisors, co-founder of Africa Expert Network. Well,
thank you, Shaka.
I have to say, frankly, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the pleasure and the honor to host you on Straight Talk Africa for the first time, mind you.
It is. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're most welcome.
Thank you.
And Prince Dickson Wasaja, lawyer specializing in security and international law at the University of Manchester Law School. He's also a member of the UK's Labour Party. And he joins us, of course, live from our studios in London. Well, Prince Wasaja, again, I also have to say, frankly, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa, you too, for the first time.
It's a pleasure to be here, and good evening, viewers.
You're most welcome, sir. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Oble. You know, before the program started, you actually told me that Brexit actually occurred while you were physically in London.
Yes, I was in London last week for the Africa Energy Forum, as where many people who do business in Africa, they were also in London. And the vote happened, and there was just a sense of bewilderment last Friday as people walked around and began to understand and grasp the implications of what had been decided. And it was definitely a witnessing history kind of experience.
What was your immediate reaction, really?
My reaction was similar to kind of how Jill framed it. I didn't think it was out of the realm of possibility, given the polling beforehand. But it did make me think about the U.S. election a lot and the impact that kind of growing nationalist, populist viewpoints here in the U.S., how they correspond to what happened in the U.K. So I took it as kind of an American point of view from being in London.
Why would you have that much confidence in the polls, especially given that the last British election wasn't actually predicted to have come out like that, nor did the one in Canada?
Sure, no, I think that's exactly right. That's why I actually believe there was a chance that Brexit was going to happen, because the polls going in were showing just a 4% lead for Remain. And 4% is often the margin of error in such polls. And really, as in our election and theirs, what's critical is the turnout. And the day, Thursday, the day of the vote, was terribly rainy. It was pouring, pouring rain. So I think that depressed turnout in cities like London.
But you still had 72% of the registered voters actually casting their vote.
Correct. But in London, it was a little less than
the
national average. So, and London was kind of a Remain stronghold. So there might have been a turnout element to the outcome. But still, a large portion of the country spoke, and they spoke with a voice that said leave.
And of course, when you talk about London, if they had actually come out a little bit more, perhaps the results could have been different, because London wanted to remain within the EU.
Could have.
Prince Wasaja.
Yes, Shaka.
What about you, sir? You told me that, in fact, you did cast the vote. And how did you vote?
I did, and I voted for Remain, and I indeed participated in campaigning for Remain.
What about people within your neighborhood?
Yeah, my neighborhood in Manchester, it was a very interesting pattern of election. The Greater Manchester, where I live, is made up of 10 local authorities. 7 of those voted for Leave, and 3 voted for Remain. But the pattern was the 3 that voted for Remain are the most affluent, higher levels of education, higher income levels. And that was the trend across the UK. And London returned a Remain vote strongly because of its natural wealth, the cosmopolitan nature of London, communities coming from across the world living in London. So it was natural that London would support UK remaining in the EU. But the income levels and the education levels of the people living in London was a big factor, and that was the trend across the UK. So where I live, the borough of Trafford, which happens to be one of the affluent boroughs in Greater Manchester, voted for Remain. And that came as no surprise to those that were analysing these events.
So actually, when you think about it, you're talking about people that are fairly well exposed, people that have travelled, that feel that they have more to gain, perhaps being part of global trade. And of course, when you look at the demographics too, the younger ones also voted for Remain.
That's correct. And it's quite shocking because the immediate aftermath of this vote, as it's starting to sink in, the people that voted for Leave did not appreciate the magnitude of the weight of the vote that they were casting. So having started to learn about the repercussions in relation to UK's relationship with the EU, many of them are expressing deep regrets about the decision that they made, because when journalists move around asking people how they voted, some of those that voted for Leave indeed saying that, had I known that my vote is going to count. And that showed how much voters, even in advanced democracies like here in the UK, failed to understand the weight of the vote. They just woke up in the morning non-thinking that the UK is going to leave the EU, and here we are with the decision, and we've got to live with the consequences.
Thank you very much. Now we'll pause for a short break, and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Africa Brexit. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githu Ewart, and this is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Now, Uble, you do have the changing demographics, for example, in Britain, really not being able to make a difference, because, in fact, if they had come out in larger numbers,
then they would have.
We could have a different ballgame here.
Absolutely. I think youth vote is a determining factor in many elections, mm-hmm. right? In the U.S. election in particular, turnout among youth is something we look for, especially in our coming election. The question is how many young people are going to turn out and vote. And then also in African elections, given that African demographics skew young, the question is how will the youth vote turn? And that really is what will decide future leaders.
It is very interesting that you mentioned or you made reference to our upcoming elections here. What kind of lessons, in fact, could be learned from the just-ended referendum in Britain?
Well, I think the key lesson is to not take any outcome for granted, mm-hmm. that there really is a potential for a Trump victory, for example, which in many ways has been correlated with a Brexit-type-like vote. So I think that the cities, you know, Washington, New York, L.A., Chicago, should not take for granted that that people will vote, quote-unquote, rationally, and not look to a candidate like Trump that expresses a lot of the anger that people like Boris Johnson also capitalized on for the Brexit debates.
Some people, in fact, have been suggesting, and some of these are pundits, that what you had in Britain really was a sort of coalition of the Bernie Sanders constituency and that of Trump rolled into one.
Yeah, I think because those candidates in this country tend to embody the anger that people feel about economic dislocation, the fear they have about immigration. Some of the same topics that we are hearing in our own debates were the same discussed in the Brexit debates. And so I don't think it's a coincidence that 50% of Bernie voters say that if they don't vote for Bernie, they're going to vote for Trump. So to me, that shows that they're not necessarily as focused on the political agenda piece, but more the emotional piece of being angry with the system, anti-establishment, looking for a change, a radical one. And those elements proved victorious in the UK situation. So the question is, now that we look at ours coming November, how can we refocus efforts and not rule out any potential outcome?
Prince Wasaja, what about your colleagues from the African diaspora? How do they vote? I've been reading somewhere that they may, in fact, have sided with the Brexit.
That's not entirely correct, because there is an immediate opinion poll that was conducted by one of the sponsors here, Lord Ashcroft, regarding the pattern of voting of different ethnic groupings. And you find that three quarters of the black population living in the UK voted for Remain. It was the same trend with the Muslim community. About three quarters still voted for Remain. And when it came to the indigenous population, especially in England, about 55% of the indigenous white people in England, out of the 54 million people that live in England, voted for Leave, and they are the people that swung this election to bring that unprecedented result. So majority, a huge majority of Africans living in the UK voted for Remain, because those are the people that mainly live in inner cities like London. And yeah, so we returned a Remain vote.
What about the fact that, for example, Scotland, Northern Ireland, voted, for example, to Remain, and yet Wales and England voted to leave? What kind of message should we read from that?
In fact, I will start with this point, Shaka, about what's going to define the legacy of Prime Minister David Cameron. He is likely to be written about by historians as one of the worst, if not the worst, Prime Minister that Britain has ever had. This is a man that has organized two referendums. Now, he organized a referendum in Scotland, which they narrowly won. But the repercussions politically of that referendum changed the political landscape of the United Kingdom, because the Scottish National Party almost controls all the parliamentary seats in Scotland. So it became a one-party state in Scotland. Now, immediately after Scotland had overwhelmingly voted for Remain, the first minister, who happens to be a member of the SNP, SNP is the Scottish National Party, the ruling party in Scotland, she declared that Scotland is going to initiate a process of organizing another referendum because Scotland wants to remain in the European Union. And today, as we speak, Nicola Sturgeon, the first minister, met with leaders of the European Union in Brussels to inquire about how Scotland can remain a part of the European Union. That is a very, very serious matter for the Union of the United Kingdom as we know it. The same calls are coming from Northern Ireland. The leaders of the nationalist movement in Northern Ireland are calling for a vote whether to reunite Northern Ireland with the main island. And that is a very, very serious constitutional matter which threatens to scatter these islands into smaller states. So the very survival of the United Kingdom as we know it today is at stake as a result of these bogus referendums which Mr. Cameron has been giving out for political expedience, wanting to survive as a prime minister, but not looking at the bigger national interests, the very survival of the United Kingdom. So the United Kingdom is disunited. As we speak, there is no clear leadership in the country. He immediately announced, which was a good lesson, a very good lesson, especially to African leaders, when David Cameron lost this referendum, he declared within minutes that he would be stepping down and a new leader should be elected. More so somebody who believes in UK's departure from the European Union. But that aside, he is leaving behind a country which is a total mess. And the leadership that is going to come in has got a big job on their hands to reunite this United Kingdom and also define the United Kingdom's new friends around the world.
Well, I guess we really have to accept the fact that the offer by David Cameron to resign, frankly, is something, frankly, that is very unique, especially when you look, when you compare and contrast the history or the political history of Africa. I recall that back in 2005, you did have a referendum in Kenya, and Mwai Kibaki, of course, has said lost the referendum. And what does he do? Perhaps instead of, in fact, of respecting the will of the people or the voices of the people, he sacks, he turns around and sacks the members of the cabinet who were, you know, who were in fact siding with the other side, which had won. Well, you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Diaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week from one of our most loyal followers in Nigeria. Omunua Okugbo Igodalo from Nigeria writes, "The impact Brexit will have on Africa is largely dependent on the collective willpower of Africans themselves. On the face of it, one may be tempted to believe that grants and aid from the European Union will probably be reduced. One may also be tempted to believe that Brexit will make it more difficult for Africans to migrate to Britain. Conversely, Brexit should encourage Africans to stop its economic dependence on Europe and North America. It should also be seen as an opportunity to train Africans to take pride in developing the continent. Taking everything into consideration, it's all about the determination of African people to develop themselves."
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat it does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct.
And adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidi-Uwat, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaq. Currencies, stocks and bonds plunge across Africa and other places after Britain's vote to leave the European Union triggered a slump in oil and other commodities and sent investors scrambling for safe assets. Britain is one of the largest foreign investors in Kenya, for example. The British government says that bilateral trade with the East African country totals more than $1.7 billion. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what impact will Brexit have on Africa? Mixed reactions from our viewers and listeners. But before we begin, let's remind you that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOAAfricaBrexit. And if you haven't yet, do follow us at VOAShaka. Speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Emmanuel Kachele in Tanzania, who tweets that Brexit will impact Africa like the change of trade contracts and policies with the UK and EU and the fall of markets. Let's look at another tweet while we're at it. This time it's Martin Nyalusi, still from Tanzania, who says, I think Brexit will affect the market of raw materials like flours and decreasing grants for Africa. Well, now to a comment from one of our Facebook followers. This time it's Victor Chabinga from Zambia who writes, the lesson for us Africans is that we should not overly depend on the world outside of Africa. They equally have their own problems to deal with. I cannot envision any fundamental impact of Brexit on me in Zambia. That's what he writes. Well, Shaka and guests, that's certainly an interesting take on Le Brexit, as the French have been calling it. Your take.
Very interesting indeed, Brexit. French, it could probably, France could be the next country, perhaps, if
know.
In fact the right wing of the society has its way, correct?
People are afraid of a contagion effect throughout Europe, you know, not just France, but Netherlands and countries that have expressed...
Sweden, Denmark.
Well, yes. They have,
Austria.
Exactly. Those who have expressed some worry about the European Union for some time and have these kind of fringe parties that have gained more and more popular acceptance. So I do think that there's a possibility for additional referendums on the mainland of Europe, and we'll see what happens with that. I think the issue of the day is the question of how much can this be contained and how can the negotiations between the EU and the UK evolve so that it contains the issue to just the UK.
But what do they fear, really? Is it just immigration?
In the UK or in the
in the
other countries?
And the other countries, for that matter.
I think it's a concern about dislocation, the economic dislocation that a lot of the lower classes are experiencing. And part of that is a result of globalization that's taken place over the last 25 to 30 years. And there's not been the right mechanisms to reintegrate these people of different manufacturing jobs, for example, into the economy that's more of a knowledge-based economy. So it really is an issue about managing economic dislocation and not letting that spill over into a fear, an irrational fear of immigrants.
And there is, of course, an apparent disconnect between the elite and the ordinary folks.
Clearly. And that's what we saw in the UK, and that's what we've seen in many other countries in Europe, and even our own here in the US.
Mariama, any more reaction from the audience, please?
Well, speaking of that fear that other countries will follow suit, we've been hearing, obviously, you know, Nexit, Sexit, Frexit. So it's all over the social media, I should say, the social media platforms. So we'll have to just see where this is going to take Europe. Let's go to another comment, this time from Machas Gwandu from Tanzania, who writes, it looks like the people from Tanzania have been definitely writing to us a lot. He says, I believe that Brexit will have more adverse effects on the UK than on Africa. We'll continue trading with Britain and with the EU. We will probably experience some hurdles in the area of immigration, but it might not take too long before things return to normal. One more posting, this time from Patricia Namdi in Uganda, who writes, the British withdrawal from the EU will lead to drastic changes, and evidence of this is the fact that PM David Cameron have announced his resignation. This is a lesson for Africa, which has integrations like ECOWAS and the Africa Union, that integration should be people-centered. Brexit will have an impact on African politics and its economy. Development of African countries will be affected because the EU is Africa's most important donor. Markets will be affected and African economies may suffer. A lot to digest here, Shaka, and guests, again, your take on these comments.
Thank you very much. Prince Wasaja, are you there?
I'm here, Shaka.
Your reaction, especially in view of the fact that you have a situation with the East African community where you have voices that want to fast track what they characterize as the East African Federation.
Yes, and this is the story. Because the very disease that has caused the death of UK's relationship with the EU is what is being replicated with African dictators as they forge these regional blocks. A case in point is the East African community that has been very strongly and forcefully driven by dictator Museveni of Uganda.
How can you call him a dictator when, in fact, he says he's being elected by his people? He's democratically elected.
But this is a man who goes into elections and announces that whatever the will of the people, he's not going to hand over power. So how do you characterize such an evil dictator? So the will of the people, as we saw it here in the UK, this wasn't a vote of confidence or no confidence about Prime Minister David Cameron. But he respected the will of the people. And it wasn't a huge margin. But you find people like Museveni competing with his opponents in an election and just declares that he cannot accept the outcome of that election unless it's in his favor. But back to our point of the impact of these regional blocs. They have been forging these relationships without involving the masses. If you traveled around the East African region, I do by the nature of my work, you find that people do not have any understanding about why this so-called East African community is being forged. And you hear, especially Museveni, I repeated this name because he's the longest serving in the region. He took it as a personal project to establish what he calls a Federation of East Africa. He wants more political integration, a political union, having one president in East Africa. That has got to be rejected by all the people in that region, that this man doesn't mean well for the region, as we are seeing what he has been doing to the people of Uganda. However, for regional groups, I'm not against countries coming together to work together to sign trade deals. But the people who are affected by the decisions of the leaders have got to be consulted, and their views have got to be taken into account. And that is what the people of this country, where I am today in the United Kingdom, said to their leaders. You don't listen to us, you don't consult us, you just go to Brussels, sit with your fair elite and make decisions that have got far-reaching consequences on our day-to-day lives. We have rejected this, and this is the message. So it's the message to African politicians that much as we want these unions to be forged, a much closer African Union, a much closer trading relationship with African countries, which is a good idea because Africa, as it is, which has got a larger population, but with a low income base to spend on commodities. They need to come together and create jobs and create opportunities for a very young population on the continent. But people have got to be consulted, and that is the message. And the people's will has got to be respected.
Thank you very much. Thank you, too, of course, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
We'll do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. If you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Just go to the VOA Straight Talk Africa program page on our website, or simply watch us on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the 18-year prison sentence given to former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba by the International Criminal Court for rape and murder in the Central African Republic. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back. And today, of course, we are talking about the African reaction to the Brexit. Our distinguished guests are Oble Rubi, Senior Fellow at the Atlantic Council and co-author of The Next Africa, and Prince Dickson Wasaja, lawyer specializing in security and international law at the University of Manchester School of Law. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have to say frankly that once again, profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
It's a pleasure. And maybe, Shaka, I can speak a little bit to what Prince said before the break.
Why not?
About the East African community and the process of integration in Africa and what Brexit means for that.
But
because many people like myself who've been trying to get more U.S. companies to do business in Africa over the last decade really deeply believe that Africa needs a larger market, that functionally many African countries are too small to attract the investment that will create the jobs necessary. And the kind of bifurcation of all these countries creates difficulty for people to move around, free movement of labor and capital. And so what I think you've seen in the EAC is actually a stellar example of where they have achieved some free movement of labor and free movement of capital. It's a customs union, so therefore they don't charge each other tariffs. They've reduced roaming costs, so you don't have to roam when you're within the EAC. Mm-hmm. And that alone has increased call volumes between Rwanda and Kenya 4 times just 2 months after that. They reduced the transit times from Mombasa to Kigali. And those things really mean real economic opportunity for the people. So while it is true that some of them are technocratic experiments that are not well understood by the general population, the impact of them, meaning faster trade, a lower cost of doing business mean that more jobs can be created. So I think it's a very important point that African countries kind of maintain momentum on the economic aspects of integration. Though I think the Brexit will make them weary of more of the political integration efforts.
What about the issue of the ordinary person, for example, within the regional community, not being aware of that thing called the East African community? In fact, most ordinary Africans, as I crisscross the continent, frankly, are not even aware of this thing called African Union. What about that?
I think these are the challenges that all democracies have around education. And as government gets more and more complex, it's more and more difficult to understand all of those things. Additionally, there's a lot of questions around how identity has been shaped historically across Africa. Because you take Nigeria, for example, and people's main identity may start as Igbo or Yoruba rather than Nigerian. So then, to then think that they're see themselves as part of ECOWAS is a question even for the national identity. So I think the question of how people understand the forces on the macroeconomic plane that affect their lives is an issue that all people face, not only here.
So governments basically need to be really very aggressive in terms of selling that idea.
Selling and educating.
How it is in the benefits, really, the benefit of those people, rather than simply impose. And you find that a lot of these African regional and continental organizations, they are terrific in terms of rhetoric, they are terrific in terms of on paper, but at the end of the day, frankly, it is the top that seems to enjoy the benefits, but not the majority of the people down there.
Well, I think, for example, those who are Kenyan or Ugandan, when they go to get a passport now, they can get an East African passport so that they do not have to have visas or checks between going in between the five countries of East Africa.
Right.
So I think that's a real example affecting real people.
But those are still, again, the elite. Can you tell me what percentage of people, in fact, can access passports in East Africa?
No, I agree. It's definitely an economic elite thing, but the goal of all society should be able to move more people into that category, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not to prevent that category of people from doing greater business. No, it's to try to move more people from away from poverty and into economic prosperity so that they can get a passport and they can travel. That should be the goal and the focus of our efforts. And I think it's a question of education of a lot of the citizenship.
Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. And there is someone here. Good evening, Joel from Holland. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Shaka, and good evening to.
I'm hugely terrific. How are you?
On the show. Yeah, I'm very fine.
Yeah, what is your question, Joel?
I wouldn't like to term it as a question. But I would like to.
Make a comment?
To make a comment about what is going on.
You have 1 minute, please.
Thank you very much. I think I will use less than that. I wanted to say that we have a dilemma at hand. And I mean we, the activists who believe in the rule of law, activists of democracy, because we have a continent that has been stagnant since the 1960s. And we have been hoping and praying that generations to come would change it for the better. But the bad omens that have occurred, namely terrorism and recently disintegration of hitherto anticipated the groupings like the EU, when they disintegrate, then it spells doom. For example, I've been running campaigns to disentangle Museveni from power, and I have written a petition to numerous organizations, including the EU and the president of USA. But now that we have this Brexit it appears the international community is going to spend a lot of time again looking at the Brexit issue because it's huge, actually, we can see.
I thought you promised that you'd be speaking for less than a minute, Joel.
but you can appreciate that the issue I'm pointing to, Shaka, is very, very pertinent to the topic of the program, of your program. I'm saying that we are seeing Brexit coming to overshadow what we are trying to cry about in Uganda, in East Africa, which you guys are eloquently talking about.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Joel. Thank you, Joel. Let's go to Francis from Britain, which used to be, of course, Great Britain, when, of course, it presided over an empire where the sun never set 24/7. Francis?
Hello.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Yes, please.
Yeah, mine is also, I would call it, it's not really a question, but it's just an observation.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an observation because really what happened in the UK, my name is Francis Muhozi Ndagawanye, from Rwakadaba Kabale, Uganda.
Wow, you sound like you come from home, man.
Oh, yeah, I come from Rwakadaba Kabale, Uganda.
Did you vote?
So, yeah, I voted, yeah, and I voted to remain.
Uh-huh.
But we were, democracy was at work and we were beaten. So we have to go with what the people, the majority have decided. So on that note, I'm really bothered because Immediately, the results were announced in the UK. President Museveni, who I call a dictator, just came out and said, how can he see all these people? How can he mock the president, the prime minister of Britain, Cameron? He said, how can you organize a referendum when you are in power, lose it, and after all resign? So to him, It was unheard of. Anyway, he's used to that. He has done it several times to people in Uganda. So that one is one. The second one is President Kagame was of Rwanda. He's another dictator there. He was very, very happy. He said, "Oh, Cameron has been taught a lesson."
How can you call President Paul Kagame a dictator? When the last time I checked, he says his people have in fact given a mandate for almost becoming a life president.
You need to know what is going on in that country. How can you organize a referendum in 1 week and get 92% and you think that you are really organizing people? How can you take people like people, all people who come out to oppose you politically, you just throw them into jail? There is a woman now, Victoria Ingabire, who is just languishing in the prisons in Rwanda because of wanting to stand against Paul Kagame. Anyway, that's the topic for another day.
It looks like exactly now, that. We may have to discuss that another time with another topic.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, but what I'm saying now is about the Brexit. Kagame was very happy that Cameron was being taught a lesson. It was in his papers, those papers in Rwanda. I'm quoting a newspaper. I said, those people have been taught a lesson. How can you come to dictate democracy and rule of law in Rwanda when you don't have control of your people? He was very happy, rejoicing. So to me, I'm really concerned. Why are these two people very happy that Cameroon has been kicked out of power, not realizing that Cameroon really is a real democrat? Once you've gone into elections and lost, you accept the rule of the majority.
Thank you. Thank you very much. But we also do have, some positive sides of democracy, because the last time I checked, for example, you had a president, Rupia Banda of Zambia, who lost an election to a Michael Sata and considered defeat with grace. You did have a president of Senegal, Abdou Wade, who
Nigeria
lost an election, considered defeat. Yes, you did have, of course, Nigeria, good luck, Jonathan, who considered defeat And now we have Major General Muhammadu Buhari in power. So we do have some good things working for us on the continent, even though things may not look that very rosy in the Great Lakes region of Africa. Let's go to Nigeria. Good evening, Patrick from Nigeria. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Mr. Saka. Good evening, our guest.
I am terrific. How are you today?
So, Okura for Patrick from Arujuku here in Nigeria is my name. Mm-hmm. Mr. Saka, you see, UK exit is a welcome development to me as an African, because African leaders should think inwardly, not every second per second we run to UK for our assistance. Especially funding of projects in Africa is too common. Any mention we run to UK. The exit of UK will now reduce Africans rushing to UK for white collar jobs. My question to our guest, ma'am, I want to find out from our guest. Those UK populists now calling for a peer referendum, where were they when this issue came up on board about the referendum? Thank you very
Hello?
Much. Have a pleasure to be here. Hello?
Yes, please.
My question to madam is this. Why do some UK populists calling for an appeal referendum, where were they when this issue of coming for a referendum at the initial stage? Now, the referendum has been cancelled, the vote has been cancelled, now they are not calling for an appeal.
I see.
Are they turning the appeal now to African situation? Any man not in, we now go to appeal. At the end of the day, everything will just come back to square one. Thank you very much.
I guess it talks as a result of a requisite. Perhaps some more than 3 million petitioners so far.
Yes.
And in fact, there is, I think, a clause within Parliament, the House of Parliament, that if you have more than, 100,000 signatories or something, you may, in fact, trigger a revote.
Yes, there's an effort right now by many who say they regret their vote or they didn't realize their vote was going to count, which is, as Prince said earlier, a very odd thing to say, that are calling for a new vote. Mm-hmm. I personally doubt the UK.
Is that likely to happen in a democracy where people have spoken?
I personally doubt the UK is going to go through an entirely new referendum. But it's certainly a large number who have said that they would like to revote. And I'm sure some who didn't make it out to vote that day are also saying that they would the next time. So it is a question on how the UK is going to handle those requests.
The beautiful thing, of course, is that the UK has a constitution that is unwritten.
Yes. It's well understood, though.
Very interesting. Let's go to Samuel from Uganda. Good evening, Samuel. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Shaka. How are you?
I guess that we are running out of time.
Prince
Wasaja?
Shaka, how are you?
I am terrific. How are you? I'm afraid that time is not our best ally, really. So you'll probably have to ask your question next week. Your closing notes, Prince Wasaja, you have 30 seconds.
Thank you so much, Shakab. I want to end on a very optimistic note. I think we can get something positive out of this referendum. A, there is an opportunity now for African countries to negotiate new trade deals with the UK. Now, there is also hope in those negotiations for civil society and pro-democracy organizations to pressure the UK not to go around the continent.
Unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally, Prince Wasaja.
Yeah, kissing dictators. Now, like Museveni, well, pressure has got to be exerted to release people like Dr. Besigye.
I hate to say it, but we have no time really for that. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Oble Rube, Senior Fellow at the Atlantic Council and co-author of The Next Africa, and Prince Dickson Wasaja, lawyer specializing in security and international law at the University of Manchester School of Law. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, learning English is coming.